Blog Talk Radio.
I hate you both. I've hated you ever since I can remember. I hate you, and I wish you both had cancer.
Cancer?
Yes, in the head.
I'm as tired as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
People seem to like me because I am polite and I'm rarely late.
And now the host of the Stupid Cancer Show, Matthew Zachary.
Monday, July 6th, and we are once again live on the Stupid Cancer Show, the voice of young adults with cancer. We are your friendly neighborhood weekly social webcast, finally giving that voice to nearly 5 million young adults affected by cancer. This broadcast is a program of the I'm Too Young for This Cancer Foundation, a national leader in the fight against cancer, working exclusively on behalf of survivors and their care providers under the age of 40. Got cancer under 40? Sucks, huh? Well, get busy living, because the Stupid Cancer Show is on the air. Welcome to tonight's broadcast, my friends. We are here to change the world one chemo infusion at a time and share all of our collective crapness. Now call me a hippie, but do not call me a victim, because I don't believe that change is possible if you never disrupt and challenge the status quo. I am still here, you are still here, and this is why we fight. Forget the cure, folks. That's right, you heard it here first. Forget the cure. Survivorship is all that matters. So welcome, my friends, to the Stupid Cancer Movement, because we're here to stay and the couch is comfy. Here in Stupid Cancer Land, we're not just about the quantity of your life, we're about the quality, too. Why? Because there's more to the cure than just research. They need to cure cancer for Gen X and Gen Y, whatever that means. It's only going to come from within our own ranks. Are we on our own? Well, I said that if we're the generation that invented Google and Facebook and Second Life and kept Sanjaya on American Idol all those weeks, we should be able to take care of our own. This is Generation Cancer, and it is our fight. We have the sheer numbers, the voting power, and the influence to change the rules. Because remission is not a cure. And goddamn, survivorship is really all that matters. Anyway, last week's show, healthcare bloggers du jour, in our spotlight, I2Y musician Scott Slater, Dr. Wendy Harpham, survivor patient advocate healthcare blogger, and my friend Jane Saracen Khan, health economist, founder of Think Health and Health Populi. Tonight, a pseudo-sequel to last week's show. Oh, excuse me there, folks. In the survivor spotlight, Cindy Papale, breast cancer survivor, author of The Empty Cup Runneth Over, and I2Y musician Tom Wilner and Andy Dumiak, both young adult singer-songwriters. Tom is a testicular cancer survivor, and Andy is a bereaved young adult spouse. Contributing artists to the I2Y Benefit CD Volume 2. Alrighty, so hello, my friends, and welcome to yet another fun-filled and exciting romp through the hay on tonight's Stupid Cancer Show, and a Stupid Cancer welcome to all of our first-time listeners here on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Coming at you live from the Chemo Deck, our fabulous studio in downtown Manhattan, I am your host, Matthew Zachary, 13-year young adult pediatric brain cancer survivor. Joining me live in the studio tonight, as always, our chief cancer anarchist, Jack Bouffard. Hello, Jack.
What's up, Matthew? How you doing?
I am doing slammin'-tastic. Jeff will be monitoring our live, concurrent, interactive chat room. So if you have something to say, well, I might ignore him. He won't nudge him to death and ask him all the questions you wouldn't want to ask your mother.
That's true.
I guess so. In our live studio audience tonight, we have a friend of mine, friend of the family's, actually a friend of my family's, the wonderful Tommy Waters. Say hi, Tom.
Hello, world.
Hello, world. And Tommy, what was your diagnosis?
Acute lymphoblastic leukemia with a one relapse.
And it was the cancer so nice you got it twice?
Yes.
Fabulous. And how are you doing these days?
In remission, Metaport free. I'm busy living.
Love it. You get applause for that one, my
He's
friend.
Man.
All right, Tommy gets applause for that one. Now, what's interesting about Tommy, goes to St. Bonaventure University in upstate New York, and he is a friend of Leah Shearer, who we make fun of on the show all the time. Leah runs upstate New York's chapter for I2Y. She is an alum of St. Bonaventure and met Tommy at an event we did there last year called Circus for the Cure. In a sort of a small world scenario, Tommy and I have the exact same oncologist at NYU, which is also the exact same oncologist that my late brother-in-law had, and he actually knew my late brother-in-law, Carl Feldman, and that's true, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And what's your take on Carl?
Carl was a very inspiring young man. He was older than me, but when I met him and when I first started treatment, he really had an impact on me in facing my diagnosis with strength and a positive attitude.
Well, I think that sums it up. I mean, look, Carl's birthday was July 1st, and so he would have been 25 years old this week, and it's just kind of amazing that he's been gone almost 6 years, but it means a lot that we met each other and just, you know, karmically, you know, that you knew him, and I'm really glad that you're able to share that perspective and that experience.
Yes, it is a small world.
So, all right, so that's Tommy Waters, and Tommy actually was on the panel at the OMG conference in Syracuse that we just had, which is a very successful event, too. I understand that Carol Rosenthal will not be joining us tonight. I think she has another obligation, so we'll be looking to have her back on the show next week. So before we get to Jack and the news and just having another conversation, I have a couple of things to say tonight. Obviously, this show is all about poking a stick at cancer. It's all about you know, trying to make fun of it, make light of it, and sort of deal with it in a way that's a little humorous and a little off the cuff and irreverent. I think it's important to note that cancer is a real issue. Cancer is something that affects millions of people every day, and it's truly something that has a very harmful impact on millions of Americans every year. And with that, I have a positive note and a memoriam note. We're going to say, in Hebrew we say Misha Berach, which is the prayer for healing prayer that they read every Shabbos in the synagogue. Carolyn Watson is currently in hospice right now for treatment, and we are going to send our prayers and our love to her and a nice shout-out on tonight's Stupid Cancer Show for her. And I have a note here from our San Francisco chapter that we did lose an I2Wire from there. Marion Ford died peacefully on July 2nd, 2009, surrounded by family and loved ones. Ellen Tupman, who was an I2Wire from our leadership cabinet and runs the San Francisco region for us, had this quote to say about Marion, that she was beautiful in every way and shared with me many, many times how much I2Y meant to her and how looking forward to the happy hours would get her through the week sometimes. Can't really get any more powerful than that. Marion's memorial will be held at Neptune Society Columbarium on Friday, July 17th from 1:30 to 3:30, which is located at 1 Lorraine Court in San Francisco. There will be a gathering of family and friends at Marion and Len's home, 2663 14th Avenue in San Francisco, following the memorial from 4 to 7. If anyone has any questions about that, obviously listen to the archive of the show or email Ellen Tupman, which is etupman, T-U-P-M-A-N, Ellen Tupman at i2y.com. So if we could, just a moment of silence for Marion Ford. All right, thank you very much.
We're losing too many people, Matt.
We are losing too many people. It still happens, and it happens every day. And, you know, like I said, it's going to take a lot to create the change that needs to happen to reduce the death rates in young adults. And I just read another thing today that talked about how mortality in the young adult community is actually increasing for certain cancers, and that the issues of delayed diagnosis are not being addressed. Granted, it's only like a 3.5-year-old cause, but still, you know, we're trying to make strides every day. We're trying to do this for you people out there, and we're doing what we can. And with your help, we'll ultimately be successful. And I don't say that in terms of just generic rhetoric, but it is something that we can be that change. We already have been that change, and I think that there's nothing but blue skies for the young adult cancer movement moving forward. So.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I had to. Say goodbye to a friend last week. He was 54, so technically he's outside the demographic of a young adult, but 54 is way too young. And his name is Bobby DiNardo. He's a police officer in my town in Danbury, Connecticut. He also was a youth baseball coach and basketball coach and, you know, just a man about town, living life. And, he left 4 kids behind. And it's not fair. You know, this is why we fight the fight that we're in. And, you know, we just want to make sure that what happens to us, it doesn't happen to somebody else, and, you know, that's why we just keep plugging along.
No, and it just bothers me, not even just on that basic level, but, you know, people keep emailing me all the time saying, you know, we're going to find a cure. And I think that's all well and good, and everyone knows from hearing me talk and write and blog and rant for the last 2.5 years that I'm not a fan of the word cure, and I think it really is just something everyone has to sit back, take a breath, and understand what it actually means. I had a very lengthy conversation today with a really close friend of mine who's off treatment and sort of living the rest of her life on her terms, and it was an incredibly in-depth and meaningful conversation to have, but it redefines what cure means. It's about choice. It's about how you choose to live, and the fact that cancer is 25,000 different kinds of diseases, there's no one magic aspirin pill that's going to be invented one day that's going to help everybody. So if I could lend any comment to this part of the conversation, it's just about rethink what cure means, because we have an opportunity to set people straight and put them on a course where their charity will actually have an impact,
right,
and make a difference in the quality of people's lives and how they choose to live.
Right. And you know, my opinion, to, you know, piggyback what you're saying, is there is so much focus on the cure. But what about the cause? So it's like, okay, we're going to raise all this money for the cure. So when you get cancer, we're going to try and fix it. But what about all the stuff that, you know, relates to young adults with why we're being diagnosed and you know, what our symptoms are and why it takes so long to be diagnosed? It's like, where's the funding with that?
Right. And actually, my recent essay, Cancer from 30,000 Feet, took a jab at the establishment, as it typically does when I write stuff, about how we're racing for the cure, we should be racing for the cause.
Right.
And it's just, you know, we use the term inconvenient truth, but at the end of the day, it is an inconvenient truth to look at why we're getting cancer in the first place, when I have no doubt in my mind that I'm not a conspiracy theorist and I don't claim to actually have real data on this, but there's no doubt, at least in my mind, that the environment, pesticides, toxins, what's in our food supply, the water supply, and the air, that can't be helping in any way, shape, or form. Yet, if we look at that chain smokers still live to 99,
yeah,
and athletes get cancer in the prime of their lives, it's just a hodgepodge for everybody.
Right. And another thing is with these stupid insurance companies, it's like they won't give a provider $5,000 for the patient's CAT scan, but if they do have cancer, then they'll pay for the $200,000 worth of treatment.
Right. I mean, but that's because is it because the doctors get reimbursed if it's a larger expense?
I don't know.
Okay.
I just think it's insane. You know, my anger just kind of welled up from there. It's like, okay, well, you won't pay for the preventive measure, but you'll pay for all the other crap that comes along with it.
I got denied. I had my first claim denied in 13 years this week.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, I get MRIs all the time. I see like a wealth of doctors all year just to keep me in check and make sure I'm still going to live and all that. I needed to get an MRI of my knee, you know, like the most unrelated part of me compared to what I've been through.
Right.
And they turned it down. They approve MRIs and brain scans and CAT scans and everything. And I want an MRI of my knee. They said no.
And did they give you a reason?
No, no reason. I apparently have to get an X-ray instead of an MRI. They'll approve that.
That's weird.
Doesn't make any sense.
No.
Doesn't make any sense. So, I don't know. What's been going on in the news this week? Anything in cancer land that you heard about?
The only thing I've heard about is Michael Jackson died.
Michael Jackson died?
Apparently.
I never heard about it.
And you know what kills me about the, you know, mainstream media in the U.S. and everything like that is you watch the nightly news, and every night it's like 20 minutes of Michael Jackson coverage, and then it's like, oh, and by the way, North Korea is pointing missiles at Hawaii. And people are just like, well, we don't care about Hawaii. We want to know when Michael Jackson services are going to be and, you know, all this other stuff. And it's just like, it just shows you how skewed Americans are when it comes to what's important and what's not.
Yeah, but this is anything. Last year or whenever the Anna Nicole Smith trial took over, like, all right, Anna Nicole Smith. Oh, and by the way, people are dying in Iraq.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's just crazy. But, you know, that hasn't really changed much, right?
No.
It's all the same old. I'm trying to think what I was tweeting this week. Oh, I know what I want to let people know. Let me pull up my tweet sheet here. And yes, I did call it a tweet sheet because I keep track of what I tweet. We just launched a couple of chapters across the country. If people want to take a listen on Facebook, we have a new group in Buffalo. We launched I2Y in Maine, in Louisiana, in New Orleans, and I believe today.
What about today?
And today, we just launched I2Y Indiana. Yeah, so if anyone listening out there from those states, go to our Facebook page. Actually, I think the shortcut to get to the all the lists of our Facebook groups is ping.i2y.com, P-I-N-G, ping.i2y.com, and you get a whole list of all 40-something groups we have around the country. I2Y Nebraska, all right, I see that in the chat room here. Well, we can talk about I2Y Nebraska.
I2Y Cornhusker?
You know what? I was in Nebraska in 1980. My parents took the standard Clark W. Griswold family vacation trip.
You didn't tie the dog to the back of the car,
No, we
did
didn't
you?
Drag the dog in the back of the car. But at the end of the day, we did go to the Corn Palace, and I think that's actually in South Dakota, but for some reason there was a lot of Nebraska paraphernalia there.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Did you go to Wally World?
Yeah, in the top of the chat room with Wally World.
Oh, yeah. You know what else is the big news of the week is that Spencer's Gift sold out of the StupidCancer.com bracelet.
Yes, the StupidCancer.com bracelets. I'm really proud of our entire global Stupid Cancer community here. We sold out of the Stupid Cancer wristbands at Spencer's nationwide in like 3 days. And from what I heard from people, there were four different wristbands that were being sold at Spencer's.
Yep.
And our people went in and just raided only the Stupid Cancer wristbands. And they took pictures of the bin, which had no Stupid Cancer wristbands in it, but like a buttload of all the others still left there.
How many?
Buttload.
Oh, that's a lot.
That's a mathematical formula there for good stuff.
Yeah, I learned about buttloads in my physics class in high school.
Okay. So, yeah, so in good news for everyone, we are going to be launching our own wristband campaign this fall, looking at early October, maybe late September. There was such a demand for it. People were sending in almost angry emails saying, where are my wristbands? My Spencer's was sold out. And, you know, we weren't expecting this. And if anyone knows me, I have not been a fan of the wristband idea. I think it has been completely fizzled out. I don't know if many people that wear wristbands know why they wear them. I think the fashion trend had expired until we got partnered with Spencer's and they did this thing. And I had no idea there was going to be such an incredible response to this. So we are going to launch a national, international for that matter, wristband campaign that will be for sale online. If we can find a retail sponsor to sell them in stores, we shall do that as well. And I think our initial round is going to be 100,000. And they're going to be $10 for a 10-pack, just like the Livestrong wristbands. And the black band with red and white on it and the middle finger, I don't think you can do much better than that. So
yeah, there's actually for all the listeners out there, there's a Facebook group. If you go to the search box at the top of your Facebook page and just type in Cancer Bird, you will be led to a list of groups. And the first one is 10 Million Strong for Giving Cancer the Bird. And that is the official Facebook group for the StupidCancer.com bracelet.
And we just created a short link for this. It's just thecancerbird.com.
Oh,
and that'll
take
you to our page, which will take you to Facebook. So it's a little easier to do.
There's two ways to get to it.
There's two ways to get there. So you will actually be able to, and again, we're ramping up this campaign for October when the wristbands launch again. We do hope to satisfy and quench the thirst that's out there. Again, we had no idea there was going to be such an incredible need or response. People from Australia were writing in saying, where's our wristband?
Australia, London, the Netherlands?
Yeah.
And New Jersey.
And New Jersey, yes. Yes. Well, actually, giving the bird apparently is called the Jersey salute.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's also how you proceed at an intersection in downtown Manhattan.
That is true. That is true. All right. Well, on that note, let's hit up the news. And where is the news button? And here we go.
Hello, I'm Kent Brockman, and this is Eye on Cancer.
Just the facts, ma'am.
Alrighty, folks, during this part of the Stupid Cancer Show, we announce worthy news stories to our adoring listeners to inform them about the latest and greatest in young adult programs. That is free young adult programs, services, events, projects, and other stuff. If you have an upcoming program, event, press release, or service that you would like to hear broadcast during the news segment of the Stupid Cancer Show, please fax it to us at 646-861-2565 or email jack@i2y.com. All you, Jack.
That's jack@i2y.com. Thank you, Matthew, and here's your Stupid Cancer News. Got a couple events coming up. One of them is in my home state of Connecticut, in my hometown of Danbury. July 15th, I believe that's Wednesday, at 6 p.m. at Ann's Place, the home of ICANN. Join me and Dr. Mark Rappaport, who is a young adult survivor oncologist, Matthew.
Ooh, we like those people.
Yes, because they get it. He will be speaking about issues specific to the survivors, for the young adult survivor community, 40 and under, such as relationships, sexuality, parenting, living well, creating the new normal for you and those you care about. For any information on this event, please email me, jack@i2y.com, and I will get you registered for this event. So again, it's July 15th at 6 p.m. in Danbury, Connecticut at Ann's Place, and you can email me directly, jack@i2y.com, and I will get you all the information. Coming up Tuesday, July 21st, in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, we have our Bean and Barrel. It's actually a Stupid Cancer Happy Hour, but I like saying Bean and Barrel.
Oh, God.
But Bean and Barrel is the name of the establishment that is being held at. So Stupid Cancer Happy Hour for the North Carolina chapter, Tuesday, July 21st, from 6:30 to 10 at the Bean and Barrel, which is on Governor's Drive in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Coming up in Florida, we have our Howl at the Moon Limo Scavenger Hunt. It's Saturday, July 25th, from 5 to 11:30 p.m., 4 hours in a 5-star luxury limousine. And all proceeds from this limo scavenger hunt are going to I2Y. And you can find out about the North Carolina Happy Hour and the limo scavenger hunt at events.i2y.com. Moving on to Everything Changes, the Insider's Guide to Cancer in Your 20s and 30s. It's a newly released book written by our very own Stupid Cancer host, Carol Rosenthal. Everything Changes, Dust the Sugarcoating Off of the Young Adult Cancer Experience, is packed with gripping stories and an unprecedented collection of young adult cancer resources. Everything Changes is available wherever books are sold. Visit the website, everythingchangesbook.com. Next up, we have 70k.org. That's the word 70, the letter K.org. There are approximately 70,000 people aged 15 to 39 diagnosed with cancer every year. For over 2 decades, there has been little or no improvement in survival for this age group. By signing this bill, you are supporting the Adolescent and Young Adult Cancer Bill of Rights to be established as a standard for care to meet the needs of this underserved population. Moving on to cancer care programs, the young adult groups that are active and running at cancer care are as follows. Living with cancer, in active treatment. Life after cancer, for those in post-treatment. Young adults loss of a parent, young women with breast cancer, young adult individual grief counseling, and young adult caregiver for all diagnoses and relationships. Contact Julie Larson at jlarson@cancercare.org. That's J-L-A-R-S-O-N at cancercare.org. Or you can reach Julie by phone at area code 212-712-6173. Cancer sucks. It really, really sucks. Cancer sucks. It really, really sucks.
Wait, the water boy.
That's right, Matthew. Very good.
It took me 3 shows.
Yes. It's not water sucks, it's cancer sucks.
Right, okay.
CancerReallySucks.org is a teen website sponsored by the nonprofit organization Gems of Hope Incorporated. With a mission of bringing hope to cancer patients and their families, www.cancerreallysucks.org was designed by teens for teens. This site offers strategies on how to deal with a cancer diagnosis in the family and much more. An open chat line is held on the first and third Wednesday of the month from 10 to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Check it out at www.cancerreallysucks.org. FirstDescent.org is offering their 2009 program schedule. Let's see, they're actually offering their Glacier National Park First Descent in Montana this week and next week. So this week's already underway. Next week, July 12th through the 18th, Glacier National Park, Montana, as well as July 19th through the 25th. July 17th to the 23rd is their Pacific Northwest First Descent, and that is in White Salmon, Washington. I will be participating in that match. So you're going to have to handle the Stupid Cancer Show without me that week.
I don't know if that's humanly possible.
We'll just have to cancel it,
okay,
because this show would suck without me, just like cancer sucks. So that is the White Salmon, Washington, Pacific Northwest is July 17th through July 23rd. July 24th through the 30th and July 31st through August 6th is their First Descent in Vail, Colorado. August 14th through August 20th in Garden Valley, Idaho. And August 30th through September 4th in Jackson, Wyoming. You can read about these and all other First Descents at www.firstdescents.org. Moving on to Camp Make a Dream. Upcoming camps is their kids camp, July 12th through the 19th for children age 6 to 14. Their siblings camp is July 23rd through the 30th, and their heads up conference is in August. You can read about all Camp Make a Dream programs at www.campdream.org. That's campdream.org. The 2009 Cancer Fighters Awards. Great Nonprofits is running a campaign during July to identify the top-rated nonprofits across the country serving the cancer community. If you have a personal experience as a volunteer, client, or donor for a cancer organization, post reviews and stories on greatnonprofits.org. The nonprofits that get the most positive reviews during July will win the contest. Plus, individuals who post reviews also have a chance to win prizes, such as a free copy of Everything Changes, The Insider's Guide to Cancer in Your 20s and 30s, as I mentioned earlier, featuring the book that was written by Carol Rosenthal. You can also win Organic Valley Milk for a Year, spa packages from Osmosis Day Spa, and Kabuki Springs and Spa, delicious baked goods from Dancing Deer Baking Company, and more. Visit greatnonprofits.org, or if you want to personally leave a comment regarding your experience with I'm Too Young for This, visit vote.i2y.com. Again, that's vote.i2y.com, and please leave a comment talking about how awesome i2y is. Moving on to Planet Cancer. Planet Cancer Reorientations, a retreat date has just been announced from August 21st through the 23rd for young adult survivors 25 to 40 years old. And the 18 to 25 retreat is October 23rd through the 25th in Boston, Massachusetts. For more information or to sign up for these retreats, contact Jessica at retreats@planetcancer.org, or you can call Jessica at area code 512-879-6532. So again, there is a retreat for 25 to 40-year-olds in Austin, Texas on August 21st to the 23rd, and a retreat for 18 to 25-year-olds in Boston, Massachusetts on October 23rd through the 25th. And finally, we have Live On, Sperm Banking by Mail for Cancer Patients. Trust me, fellas, do not do what Tommy Phelps did. Mailing sperm outside of a live-on kit is frowned on by our federal government. For more information on sperm banking by mail, please go to www.liveonkit.com. Live sperm banking by mail is made possible by our good friends at Fertile Hope, and Tommy asked me to send a big thank you on his behalf to the law firm of Dewey, Scroom & Howe for clearing up his embarrassing situation with the United States Postal Service. And that, my friends, is your Stupid Cancer News.
All righty, Jack, move hard, and tonight, Stupid Cancer News. All right, I just looked at the chat room, and all I saw was sperm. Okay, there we go.
Are they talking about whales?
I have no idea. Well, in any case, let's
move on.
Don't
worry, Tommy, I got your back.
Oh, boy. Oh, Jesus. Okay. Well, let's move on to our first guest.
What time is it?
Sydney Papale was born and raised in New York City and is currently an administrative assistant at the University of Miami Psychology Department. She is a 9-year breast cancer survivor and the author of the book The Empty Cup Runneth Over, released in July of 2008. Cindy is here with us tonight to discuss her life, her survivorship, and being a board member to the Christy Lash Miracle Foundation, and how her book has helped many young breast cancer survivors. please welcome to the Stupid Cancer Show, the one and only Cindy Papale. Hello, Cindy.
Hi. Thank you, Matt.
Hi, Cindy.
Hi.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you.
So, why would you move to Florida if you were growing up in the great state of New York?
Well, actually, I went to the University of Miami, and plus my family moved here, so I didn't have a choice. I didn't want to be all alone in New York.
Okay, that is probably the only excuse I will accept. And so, yeah, good old breast cancer, huh? How'd that hit you?
Actually, it did hit me hard, even though I had a family history, and I actually worked for a breast surgeon at the time. So it was a shock and not a shock. So I know that doesn't sound too well, but because I had a family history, I was not too surprised at all.
And so how old were you, and how was it detected, and were you, do you hate your doctors?
Well, I hated some of my doctors. I was diagnosed in July of 2000 at the age of 46, 1 week after my birthday, actually. And I have to say, no, I did not hate my doctors. I worked at the U of M, and many of the doctors there were very compassionate and loving and caring, and also the colleagues and everyone. I was very fortunate. I had a good support team.
And how long were you in treatment for?
I was in treatment for 5 years. I took the drug tamoxifen. I was offered chemotherapy. I was a stage one multifocal invasive breast cancer, and I chose to have a right prophylactic mastectomy, and the cancer was in the left breast.
And were you offered a clinical trial?
Actually, no. They offered me CMF, cytoxin, methotrexate, fluorouracil. I'm sure everybody out there knows what that is, and I chose not to take it.
Okay. Okay, I mean, we did a show a couple of weeks ago on clinical trials and how there's just a gross lack of awareness in connecting young adults to them. And I guess at 46, that's technically still within the fray of where doctors might not even think about it because they're not used to seeing people in their 40s with cancer.
Well, you know, actually, that's a good point that you raise about that. I chose not to have chemotherapy. My breast cancer didn't hit any lymph nodes. I was HER2 negative, meaning my tumor wasn't aggressive. And because I worked for a breast surgeon, I knew just a little bit more than the normal, well, not normal, the average woman. So I made my decision based on that.
So let me ask you a question. As someone who works, what is your position at the Miami Psychology Department? You're an
administrative assistant, correct, in the Department of Psychology.
So you're probably very familiar with the mechanics and the relationships that go into psychological treatment and care?
Yes, we have breast cancer support groups all the time, and we do have many young women. I'm also very active with the Wellness Community of Greater Miami, which is a center that has we cater and help the young. We have many there, actually, and they come there because that is one of the resources where they can come, because it's very limited. There's hardly any other places that can really help the young.
So what were you doing up until the point? Were you still working? Was this your job when you were diagnosed, or where were you?
I was actually diagnosed when I was transferred to work in the Department of Psychology, but I was still working at the UM. I'm a 28-year employee at UM.
Okay, and how did it come about that you decided to put pen to paper?
Actually, what happened to me, I was invited as a guest speaker at University of Miami Psychology women's class, and after I was diagnosed, and I really was reluctant, but then I wanted so much to help the young because I knew that they didn't know that much. And when I started speaking, I found out very quickly they didn't know that much about breast cancer at all. In fact, many of them knew nothing about what a mammogram machine even looked like.
Wow, okay. Well, I mean, that doesn't really surprise me. Like, it's this notion of just general literacy as to what is going on in cancer when you're younger is you don't even think to be familiar with it.
I know, and I was very, and I have to say, when I was speaking, the students were very compassionate, and I mean, all eyes were on me. the questions they wanted to know, does mammograms hurt? And one of the young girls said, I'm not going to get it because it hurts too much. I said, no, you need to get it, and you need to be proactive. You need to be, you know, if you don't agree with your doctor, go to another doctor. I mean, you know, you don't have to stay with that one particular doctor. It's very important that they be every woman, every young woman especially, be proactive. You know, there's all different stages to breast cancer, and there's also inflammatory breast cancer, which is very scary and very difficult to detect.
So the origin of the name of the book, The Empty Cup Runneth Over, where did that come from?
Well, one day I was just sitting. I didn't have any breasts for 5 years, Matt. I decided not to go back into surgery after I'd been through so much already, going, having the left and then the right off, and then initially first with a lumpectomy. And I decided to wear implants for a while, which I hated so much. I decided to not have any breasts for 5 years. And one day I interviewed a young girl for my book, and she actually said, you don't have any breasts? And I said, no. She says, you have to. I said, no, I don't. She says, yes, you do. She says, you look horrible. And here I am, I'm interviewing for the book. I know exactly, but she was 24. Hey, she was honest, you know. The young are honest, they're up front, and before I knew it, she flashed me her breasts. She goes, see, look at how they can look. Get them. And it's because of her that I got my breasts.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, she was. She's in the book, April, and she is an awesome survivor, great speaker, and she's very energetic.
Well, as you know, these segments go very quickly. I want to give you some time to talk about the Christy Lash Foundation, your involvement with them, and what kind of plans you got for the book going forward.
I am writing another book. I am working on several projects. Christy Lash was diagnosed at the age of 22, and throughout her ordeal, she remained so positive and energetic. You know, even when she was faced with limited resources, I'm only so sorry that she could not be here to be on your show. Before she died, she envisioned creating an organization to help young breast cancer patients. The foundation helps women under the age of 30 with medical-related expenses. And Christy knew only too well financially how cumbersome the disease can be and the unique challenges of having to face the disease at such a young age. It's a very sad story. But her journal is in my book, and I must tell everyone that not because I would like them to get the book, it is on Amazon, but her story is so inspirational. She actually guides the young how to go and what to do, and it's amazing what she says in the book. She says, let me tell you this, and you need to do this. Make sure you have a good team of doctors. Be proactive. Open your mouth. Do not stay quiet. If you don't like a doctor, get another one. So that's really important, what she writes in her book. She's just amazing, and her link is ChristyLash.org, and her name is spelled kind of different. It's KristyLash.org.
We'll put the link in the chat room. Well, and like I said, I know it's been a long time coming. We had you on the show last time about a year ago, and we didn't get to talk too much about this stuff, but I think what you're doing is phenomenal. I think that you're managing to create an incredible fan base and a great movement around what you're trying to do, and the fact that you are trying to help younger women with breast cancer is a testament to what I always talk about, how the young adult population really doesn't have a lot of advocates or voices out there on our behalf, and I think I commend you for choosing to do that.
Thank you, Matt, and I enjoy doing it, and I will never give up. I will always help educate the young. I have a very busy schedule in October to attend a lot of lectures at high school and colleges, and I'm so happy to do it, and I'm excited, and I will definitely let them know about the Matthew Zachary Stupid Cancer Show, because I believe that they need to know. They need to know exactly what's offered out there for them, because they don't know. They really don't.
Well, I thank you for being my guest. We'll definitely have to have you back in the future, and good luck with everything.
Yes, thank you, Matt. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, Cindy Papali, everybody.
Thanks, Cindy.
All righty. Where are we at now? Here we go. Okay, my first guest tonight after the spotlight, Tom Wilner, is an Atlanta-based piano singer, songwriter, whose style was recently described as this. If Dave Brubeck drove Billy Joel's daughter to her piano internship at Faith Deliverance Christian Church in Atlanta, their only route would be to go up Tom's Alley. God, I love that. Two live performances of his musical Turning 30, which features 17 songs about his experience with cancer, raised over $3,000 for charity. He released his latest CD, Rescue Me, to a sold-out crowd at the famous Eddie's Attic in Decatur, Georgia. And he releases a new song every month online at TomWilner.com. Please welcome to the show my friend and yours, the multi-talented Tom Wilner. Tom, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, man?
Oh, so good to have you on the show, my friend.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And while I do tell everybody who contributes to our albums that your song is my favorite song, your song is one of my favorite songs.
Thank you.
And we're gonna cut away to it in a little bit, but I want to talk to you about your story. I want to talk about getting diagnosed and under 30. And, I mean, for me, I remember turning 21 was a big deal, and turning 22 is a big deal. When I turned 30, I was 6 years out already, or 7 years out already. But tell us your story in a nutshell and how this all came to be.
Well, very funny that you use that term. I'm a testicular cancer survivor.
That's why I said that.
Yeah. Well, it was right about at my 30th birthday, actually, that I was diagnosed. I found a lump and went to my urologist. I had an orchiectomy, and after 5 long days of waiting for the results to come back, it turned out to be cancerous. I actually had a total of, I think, about 5 different surgeries, and over the course of my treatment and 3 months of chemotherapy, the type I had was radiation was not very useful. So, but we went with both of those. There was a recurrence after about 6 months in my lung, so I had a lung resection as well, followed by the 3 months of chemotherapy. And now I'm actually closing in on turning 40 in the next couple of months here. And so I'm officially, at least from data diagnosis, about a 10-year survivor.
Well, you get a round of applause for that, my friend.
Thank you.
I remember when I had my 10-year cancerversary on January 10th, 2006, and man, was that a good day.
I'm looking forward to it.
So you started writing music and playing piano. How old were you?
I started playing when I was 6. I probably started really writing in my teenage years, and I ended up quitting taking lessons when I was 16 and getting a portable keyboard, a synthesizer, and I started playing in bands and writing a lot more, and been doing it ever since.
And I mean, I've listened to your whole album. I think the Rescue Me album is just brilliant. The Dave Brubeck, Billy Joel, Alexa Ray, that's a great quote. Who gave you that quote?
That's actually there's a blog, I'll give him a little plug, Blazer blog, Blaiser blog.com. There's a friend of mine, actually, that I grew up with, and he did a post recently about some of the singer-songwriters that he has known, throughout his life, and he wrote a little blurb about me on there, and it's fun. It was nice, and he had some... he's a really good writer and had some really interesting ways of describing things. So I thought that was a great quote.
It is a great quote. I've gotten a lot of quotes about my music. This is a killer quote.
Excellent.
So before we cut away to the song, talk about the song. This song is called Rescue Me. I can only imagine, what it's from, what it was about. But if it's anything more deep about that, talk about it.
Well, I think it touches on a lot of different aspects of my life. There were a couple of things going on at the time that I wrote that, and one was that I was basically coming off of having gone through all these treatments with cancer, and as you and so many others are aware, it completely changes your life, completely changes your perspective on things, and so I think there's a little bit of that reflected in the song. It also actually was going back to work at the old day job, and things had changed there in the year I was gone, and coming back to that, it was strange, because so much had changed over that time period, and And so it was really sort of about feeling lost, I think, in the midst of all of what was going on in my life, and feeling like I was all alone, lost out on a boat somewhere. But, you know, sort of the hope, I guess, in the song is that, you know, you eventually find that there's other boats out there with you, and other people who are feeling lost, and so you're not actually alone at all. So that's basically the story behind Rescue Me.
Well, let's cut away to it. Here we go. This is Tom Wilner's Rescue Me from the album Rescue Me.
Oh,
Nice, Tom.
That was
real
good.
Nice.
I was jamming out over here.
Yeah, we were
excellent.
Hands over our heads and all that stuff. Great song, great song. So,
thank you.
We have a few minutes left. Talk about turning 30 and how other people can find out about what's going on with you and what you got ahead for us.
Sure. Well, turning 30 is actually a whole show. I guess it's been described different ways: a musical, a rock opera. While I was going through my experience, I wrote a total of 17 songs about it, all sorts of different aspects, and created a show, actually have a full play and everything. Last year, I decided that it was time for me to actually put this on, so I thought I should do Turning 30 before I turned 40. So I got some really talented musicians and singers to join with me, and we did the whole show, raised $1,000 for charity, and since then have been asked to do it again and raised another $2,000 in our second show. So I'm really excited about it, and I think we're going to have a third one coming up in Atlanta downtown and a couple of others in the works, and I'm sort of hoping at some point maybe I'm really excited to be on the I'm Too Young for This CD compilation, and hoping maybe we can potentially do something with I2Y as well. So if you want to find out more about it, you can go to tomwilner.com, and you can listen to basically every one of my songs there, and there's a whole section of the music from Turning 30 on my music page. You can stream the whole thing, all my Rescue Me album and everything. So yeah, by all means, check it out. Sign up for the email list, and let me know what you think.
And if you do another fundraiser, and any of the people that write you checks accidentally write them to I2Y, we'll be happy to cash them.
Absolutely.
Sounds like
a plan. I'd love to do that.
Yeah, we haven't really done much in Atlanta. It's the hotland, I should call it. But it would be great to put them together in Atlanta.
Would love to. That'd be great.
Well, good luck to you. Thank you for being on the show. Certainly not the last time you'll be here. Good luck with everything. We'll be in touch, and congratulations on everything.
Thank
turning
you so
40.
Much. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All righty. Tom Wilner, everybody. All righty. What do we got now? Okay. My next guest, Andy Dumiak, drummer for the band Hot Lava Monster, was the pillar of support for his late wife, Trish Tagney Dumiak, during her battle with cervical cancer. Andy and Trish were college sweethearts and married in 2003. Tragically, Trish was diagnosed with cervical cancer in June of 2004 and passed away in 2007 of related complications at the age of 35. Unacceptable. During Trish's courageous battle with cancer, Andy joined Hot Lava Monster with her encouragement and blessing. Andy helped the band write and finish their album, The Belly of a Whale, during her fight. Please welcome to the Super Cancer Show, my friend and yours, Andy Dumiak. Andy.
Hello.
Andy.
How are you?
Am I pronouncing your last name right?
Oh, yeah. You win a prize. Not many people do that.
Okay. Well,
directly.
Now you have to tell us how other people botch it.
Well, they like to add an N in there and call it, Andy Dumiak. That's
oh,
my favorite.
Okay.
Yeah. They
all
invent
right.
letters that don't exist.
Well, it's been a real pleasure to talk to your liaisons. It's nice to have you on the phone, hear your voice. And I like you heard me say before, I tell everyone that's on our albums that their song is my favorite, but your song is my favorite.
Awesome. Thanks. I'm glad to be a part of it. It's
and,
an honor and privilege.
And you're first on the album alphabetically, so congratulations.
Yeah, I was that was a nice surprise.
Well, that'll teach your mom to name you with an A, and congratulations. So, I mean, I want to talk about your late wife. I mean, we deal with bereaved. I mean, it's a comfort issue. I like to say bereaved spouse. Some people say widow, widower. I don't know what the comfort factor is or where you're at right now, but we are starting to develop a sort of a micro support community of bereaved spouses in the young adult community, and it's fostering this amazing network of peer support. I don't know what it was like for you, were you able to find other people your age who lost their spouses? Can you talk us through that experience?
Well, you know, as you know, it's a very personal journey, and I had a lot of support through my faith and my church, as well as my family and my friends. I wasn't a part of a, you know, support group per se, but once Trish was diagnosed, which was just a little over a year after we got married, after being together for 11 years, you know, it was quite a shock. So you look for support anywhere you can get it, really. But I'm you know, blessed to have a very tight-knit group of friends and family that provided me, you know, all the love and support that I needed, as well as Trish. And, of course, you know, we sought a therapist, so, you know, we went that route, and we're very close to our priest and the congregation at our church, which really helped out a lot, too, in getting through it.
Was she diagnosed at a later stage, or do you know how that happened?
Yeah, it was actually a later stage. You know, everything was normal. She was going for her, you know, regular routine exams, had an abnormal pap smear, and went back in following doctor's orders. You know, shortly after that, not soon enough, and it kind of snowballed. It was really alarming because it's kind of, you know, it's something that always happens to other people. You never think it's going to affect you. And when she went back in, that's when, you know, she called me at work and said, you need to come down to the doctor. And, you know, we were just in shock. We really couldn't believe what had happened. But I believe she was in stage 3 cervical cancer. And I can't remember exactly all the medical terms. But it was an advanced enough stage that she needed to have a hysterectomy pretty quickly. And it was a very rare and aggressive form of cervical cancer. And, you know, the best thing that the doctors could tell us was that it was environmental, which really didn't make a lot of sense to me.
Right.
She had what's called a conization, where they try to go in and take out the cancer cells.
Right.
And you know, save everything else. And the doctor wasn't comfortable with that, and then, she had the radical hysterectomy by the end of 2004. We were just newly married and, you know, looking forward to starting a family and the rest of our lives after being together for so long and finally getting married. You know, we were devastated, but we just wanted her to get better. At that point, you know, having kids, we grieved that for a while, you know, not being able to have children. We didn't even think that it would come to losing her. But she had the radical hysterectomy by the end of that year, began chemotherapy, and she did several rounds of that. And then, you know, she had a couple of clean CAT scans, so we thought that, you know, we were in the clear. In the following summer, we celebrated, you know, a new life and healing. And then when she went back in for a subsequent CT scan, it was back. So we went through basically the same thing again the following year, you know, more chemotherapy. We went for a second opinion up at Duke, and they, you know, said some things that just were really disturbing, that it was just manageable, it wasn't treatable. And, you know, Trish was a really tough young lady, and, you know, she helped make me the man that I am today just with her strength. And, you know, chemotherapy, as you know, it makes you feel really, really sick for, you know, quite a long time after each treatment. And she just got so fed up with feeling crummy all the time and, you know, not being able to live her life from day to day and enjoy her friends and her family and her job. She loved her job. She finally just decided she wasn't going to do chemotherapy anymore. And, you know, myself and our family and friends were kind of in shock that she made this decision and, you know, tried to talk her out of it. But through a lot of prayer and meditation, that's just what she decided to do on her own. And she decided to pursue natural healing remedies through prayer and meditation and holistic medicine. And really, she just came to life again, and we had the best year of our lives. And then the following year, 2006, had a great summer, went to Hawaii, and you know, we were thinking everything was fine, but then she started exhibiting some symptoms, like through her motor skills, like her leg wasn't working quite right. She was having some tingling sensations, and finally I came home from band practice one night, and she was sitting on the floor and couldn't get up, and that's when she refused to get CT scans that entire time. She didn't want to go get them anymore. She thought that would mess up her positive outlook on life, and
right.
And that's the way. That's, you know, it's a very personal battle. That's how she was fighting it.
On her terms.
Exactly. And when she finally went in for the CT scan, because you know she couldn't walk, we discovered that the cancer was back. Not only was it back, but it had spread to her spine and her lungs and her brain. And at that point, there was really just nothing that we could do. And she had some brain radiation, which is, you know, an awful experience for her and for us. And finally, you know, she lost her battle on Valentine's Day, 2007. And that's when she passed.
Were you writing music this whole time?
Yeah, you could say that. I was in another band for a long, long time, and Hot Lava Monster were friends of mine from the local scene, and my favorite local band. And I just decided I was going to go out and see some music one night. I couldn't find anybody to go see this band that I wanted to go see with me, and so I went by myself. And it wasn't really crowded that night, and I was just kind of leaning up against the bar having a beer, and looked over and I saw Patrick and Mike from Hot Lava Monster, and they came up and, you know, talked to me and said, and one of the first things they did, which I was, you know, flattered by, was that they just asked about Trish, and I didn't even know that they knew that I was, you know, helping her fight this battle, and they said, you know, you want to come jam with us, and I asked them what was going on with their drummer, and, you know, he left the band for personal reasons, and I started jamming with them, and, you know, they... it was kind of an audition, and jammed with them for several weeks, and they offered me the job, and I talked to Trish about it, and you know, they were one of her, you know, her favorite bands as well. She was a big fan, and you know, she said, "You better take the job."
Yeah.
So it was with her encouragement and blessing that I accepted the position, and you know, I was playing in two bands for a while, and helping Hot Lava Monster finish their the last album, The Belly of a Whale.
How far along were they with the album when you joined them?
You know, I would, if I was to give a percentage, it was probably about 60% finished. You know, they needed the drums.
Oh, got it.
And they needed a drummer to help finish the songs. You know what they say about drummers? We just hang out with the musicians, right?
Dude, I was a pianist and I played in the marching band. We have all these drummer jokes. So I'm sure you've heard all of them.
Oh yeah, I've heard them all. But, you know, I think when I joined the band, something just happened. It was the chemistry was just right. You know, the planets lined up correctly, and it was just, we just became this machine, this locomotive, and it was just, it was really, really a great experience. It was awesome to be a part of, to help them finish these songs, and, you know, help the band find a new identity, really, and a new sound. And we went to Atlanta and recorded at Sonica Studios, and it was just awesome. And, of course, I had all of this grief and anger and all these emotions, you know, a hurricane inside of me that I just had to get out. And I put them out, you know, through the drums.
And so you
hear it on the album.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to cut away to the song, which is called Weight of the World, which I can imagine has deep metaphoric meaning. Did you help write the lyrics, or were you part of the orchestration, or how did you fit into the creation of this?
Well, our singer, Patrick, is a really good lyricist. I did not help write the lyrics. I can't take credit for that. What I can take credit for is stealing one of his lyrics for the title of the album, which is The Belly of a Whale, which is, you know, very near and dear to my heart. You know, he wrote the lyric in one of our songs on the record, and I just thought that that's kind of what Hot Lava Monster represented to me personally. was, you know, the biblical story of Jonah, you know, being cast overboard and swallowed up by a whale. And that's kind of what I felt like, you know, was happening to me. And I was just out lost at sea inside of this whale. And, you know, if metaphorically speaking, the whale is hot lava monster, you know, they delivered me to dry land again. And I was able to stand on my own 2 feet. And, you know, like I said, Patrick wrote all the lyrics. As far as Way of the World goes, you know, the lyrics are, you know, I see them, they do apply to me. You know, definitely they're very personal to me, even though he wasn't writing about Trish. You know, you can just see that in the title, Way to the World. You know, anybody that's diagnosed with cancer, it affects you and your family and your friends, and, you know, it really does feel like the world is crashing down on you. And, you know, each time we went in for Trish's treatments, it happened over and over and over and over again where we felt like we were just carrying all this grief and weight and, you know, on our shoulders. And just to see her smiling every day and living strong, regardless of all this stuff that she was going through and how crappy she felt and how weak, and just, you know, she always had a smile on her face, and, you know, she was my strength. And, you know, I was honored, you know, to help support her, you know, through her battle.
Well, let's pay tribute to her and take a listen to this song. This is Way to the World from the album Belly of a Whale by
okay.
Hot Lava Monster and Andy Dumiak, drummer. All right.
Thanks.
Here we go.
You can pay your choice on a one-way track. All your moves can be taken back. Doesn't lift you high when you don't decide. And you see the end, you only have to ride. I believe in everything. I believe in everything again. We'll be right back.
a great song. What a great song.
That song is awesome.
That is a great song. Congratulations, man. What a great song
from
a great album.
The drumming was phenomenal.
Thanks a lot.
You know, the drummer, Jack.
But well, you know, I was definitely inspired by Trish and her strength on that album. You know, I have to give her credit for giving me the strength to pound those notes out, every single one of them.
You know, I know you got 50 copies of the album. There's an artist on there named Michael Minton.
Mm-hmm.
Michael passed away a couple of years ago from, Jack, do you remember what he had? I feel bad that I don't know what he had.
Cancer.
Yes, he had cancer.
You're welcome. Right.
His surviving wife, Anya, is one of our, like, Uber Kool-Aid drinking volunteers from Ohio. And she's just such a great example, and as are you, of, like, how you can go through this at such a young age so unnecessarily. It's just so unacceptable that this happens. But you're still here. You still try to do everything you can to live and to live fruitfully and meaningfully.
Right.
And if Trish can be epitomized and memorialized, her spirit can be carried through this song, I couldn't think of any other way to do it.
Absolutely.
But so just rounding out, Hot Lava Monster, I love the name. Can I even ask how that came about? Is that like another whole
that
radio show?
No. Our guitarist came up with that. It was like the childhood game, and it started out as kind of a joke. He said, let's call it this, and that can go on and on and on and on. And he just said, well, how about Hot Lava Monster? It was kind of a joke, and the rest of the guys in the band at that time liked it, and it kind of stuck. But I always thought it was the coolest band name ever. So
it is
when
pretty,
they asked me to join,
pretty,
I was
pretty
like,
cool
yeah.
One. Yeah. We just got a quote here in the chat room that your name, the Hot Lava Monster, is epic. So, and I see here in your notes you're going to be producing a new album with Sylvia Massey.
Yeah, we're heading out to Weed, California at Radio Star Studios in August, and we're going to do some songs with her. And, you know, we don't have any immediate plans to release them yet. Right now, I guess you could call them demos. But we're really excited and looking forward to working with her, and we're hoping that, you know, it's going to develop into our next record. You know, that's basically the plan.
Yeah, and for all of our listeners out there, Sylvia Massey has been producing acts such as Tool, System of a Down, and the Chili Peppers. So it's no small relationship you got working there.
Yeah, we're psyched. We're really psyched.
What is the website people can go to learn more about the band and your music?
Well, you can check us out at www.hotlavamonsterband.com, or you can also go to myspace.com/hotlavamonster. And, you know, all of our music is available through those websites and through iTunes. We just released a live record not too long ago that's got 12 songs on it. So, you know, we'd love it if you guys check us out.
Very cool. I can't thank you enough for taking the time to be on the show. I'm honored to have you as part of this project. And your music, the band's music, Trish's essence will be carried through this program of ours in perpetuity. And it's just a real humbling experience to know you and to be able to say that.
I'm honored to be a part of it. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it and appreciate what you guys are doing.
All right. Good luck, Andy, with everything.
Yeah. Thanks. You too.
Right.
Thank you.
All right. Andy Dumiak. Or should I say Dumiak? What did he say? You got to inject. You have to put vowels in there and just add words at random. And Dumiak? Is that what he said? All right. Well, we'll.
It's like confusing dumbass with Dumois.
Perhaps. Perhaps.
I do that all the time.
It's like that commercial, Hello, Mr. Dumbass.
That's exactly what I'm talking about, my friend.
Very nice, very nice.
But usually when people say Hello, Mr. Dumbass to me, they really mean Hello, Mr. Dumbass.
Doesn't surprise me in the least.
It doesn't it?
No. You are so my Baba Booey. All right, folks. Well, that's tonight's show. It's time to clean up shop here. And
I'll kick Tom out.
Yeah, Jack's going to give Tom the boot. So, all right, time for our closing sequence.
Prepare to activate.
I hear there's rumors on the internets.
Have you ever seen a grown man naked?
And so, to all of you, a fond farewell.
Hooray, I'm helping.
You are a meathead.
Oh, Magoo, you've done it again.
That was so terrible, I think you gave me cancer.
All right, folks, that's tonight's show. I hope you had as much fun as I did poking a stick at Stupid Cancer.
Love.
I'd like to thank our guests, Cindy Papali, Tom Wilner, and Andy Dumiak, and our live studio audience member, Tommy Waters. Yay! Next week, it's cancer versus the environment cage match, speaking of race for the cause, with our survivor spotlight, Jamie Reno, young adult survivor, another musician from the album I2Y Benefit CD Volume 2. Shannon Fisk, environmental attorney for the National Resource Defense Council. And Janet Gray, professor of psychology, director of science, technology, and society program at Vassar. It's going to be a hell of a show, folks. Same bad time, same bad channel. Remember, if you've missed any of our previous shows, just listen to the archives at stupidcancershow.com or subscribe to our podcast at itunes.i2y.com. Remember, if it's not stupid, it's not cancer. We'll see you all back here next week, live from the chemo deck. Jack Ruffard, Captain Stimmy, and I wish you all a pleasant evening. Go to bed, Abby.
Fire out.